So we now start about recording system, microphones actually, because for recording the sound, typically we use microphone. But not just the simple pressure omnidirectional microphone which is employed on a sound level meter. Here we are dealing with more complex microphone system, even much more expensive microphone system, as those employed for recording music, for recording the audio of a football match or similar things, events in general. If we come back to the origin of the phenomenon of sound, we remember that sound is not only sound pressure. The sound is the interaction of two physical quantities, the fluctuation of sound pressure and the movement of air particles, which is defined by their velocity. So the two physical quantities really important to detect are pressure and particle velocity. And the human body, in general, is not true that only detects pressure. This is just a first rough approximation. In reality, we also detect velocity. We detect it with our ears because we have two ears, which work more or less, at least at low frequency, like the sound intensity probe. So, knowing the sound pressure in two points, their gradient, their difference, give you the particle velocity. And the same is done by our hearing system. So we can localize the direction of arrival of sound. If we were able to listen only to pressure, we were not able to understand from where the sound is coming. So the directional information comes from velocity, doesn't come from pressure. And furthermore, the ears are not the only part of the human body sensible to sound. We hear the sound also with the skin. We hear the sound with the chest, with the stomach, with your internal organs. So, in the end, the whole of the sound is made of pressure and velocity. If we want to capture the whole information, we need to record, we channel on a recorder both pressure and velocity, and a playback. We must control with our loudspeaker system both pressure and velocity in the reproduction space. If we only focus on pressure, as most acoustic textbooks are focused on, then you are missing half of the picture. It's like for electrical circuit, only taking into account voltage and not current. It's exactly the same. If you only think in terms of voltage and you don't think also in terms of current flowing on a wire, you don't understand what's really happening in the electrical circuit. And here is the same. So we have two quantities, pressure and velocity. You see the comparison. So we have pressure microphone, velocity microphones, and hybrid microphones. Okay? A pressure microphone is perfectly omnidirectional because pressure is a scalar quantity and it does not contain any information on the direction. A velocity microphone, instead, is a polar pattern which is a figure of eight. And in this polar pattern we can find a positive lobe and a negative lobe. When the sound is coming from the positive direction, the polarity is preserved. So a positive pressure peak is still a positive peak in the electrical signal coming from the microphone. But when the direction of sound comes from back on a velocity microphone, the polarity is reversed. So a positive sound pressure peak appear as a negative velocity signal in the electrical signal coming out from the microphone. So the directional information is not only affecting the amplitude of the pulse. If the pulse comes from this direction, you don't see anything because the sensitivity of the microphone is zero from lateral sound. A velocity microphone has a direction of maximum sensitivity and a direction of null sensitivity. Okay? So you can have a perfectly omnidirectional microphone which is pressure, 100% pressure, 0% velocity, and a perfect velocity microphone which has 0% pressure sensitivity, 100% velocity sensitivity. But you can mix at different degrees. You can have a microphone which is a subcardioid, 75% pressure, just 20, a cardioid which is 50-50, so when the sound comes from back, it is positive for the pressure part of the microphone, it is negative for the velocity part. When you sum the two signals, 50 and 50, you get zero from behind. So this is a unidirectional microphone which has maximum sensitivity in the frontal direction and zero sensitivity back. It's the typical microphone used by a singer keeping in their hands. You know those coni di gelato, I don't know how they are called in English. Those microphones with the ball for singer, they are typical. These are cardioid microphones. Maximum sensitivity frontally, zero sensitivity from behind. Then there are hypercardioid microphones, where 75% are sensitive to velocity and only 25% to pressure. The strange shape. They are narrower, the frontal pattern is narrower than the cardioid, so they are more directive, more selective, but they exhibit this negative lobe fountain backwards. These are typically employed for stereo recording, for example, of a piano or for a small group of musicians. You place two of these hypercardioid microphones open with a certain angle, so in the right channel you will have more sensitivity from a group of instruments, and in the left channel you get more sensitivity from a different group of instruments. Or inside the piano for low frequency and high frequency chords. Then there are these very nice objects which are variable pattern microphones. Inside this kind of microphone there is a double diaphragm. These are microphones which really contains two microphones. And moving this knob or this ring here, you can change the amount of this kind of mixing between omnidirectional pressure and figure of eight velocity. So the same microphone can be easily configured for different polar patterns, simply rotating the knob, rotating the ring. Okay? There are many makers of this kind of variable pattern microphone. There is even a maker of a very expensive one, which contains three microphones. There is two figure of eight, one frontal and one lateral, plus the omni. And in that case, there is a stereo microphone, which can give you two outputs. Every one can have independent aiming and pattern. So this kind of microphone are currently one of the most widely used in recording studios or in theaters, because you can adjust the directivity depending on your need. It's like having a zoom, an acoustical zoom. You can have it more directive, you zoom in, the sound has more direct sound and less reverberant sound, or if you go omni, you get much more reverberation and less direct sound. So you can adjust this kind of acoustical character of your recording without moving the microphone closer or more far from the source. That's very interesting. Then the microphone can be must be connected with the other part of the equipment, the mixer, the recorder, the amplifier, and so on. Typically, the connection of the microphone with the other electrical equipment is made with a balanced cable, with a balanced connection, so a balanced cable, balanced connector, and it is connected to a balanced preamplifier. What is a balanced preamplifier? A balanced preamplifier is a differential preamplifier. It amplifies the difference between the voltage carried by two of the three wires of the microphone. So you have a ground signal, which is normally on the shield of the cable, which is actually not used. It does not carry any acoustical information. Is there just for protecting the other two wires by radio frequency contamination, electromagnetic noise? So it's just a shield, actually, the ground signal. It's not employed by the microphone or by the preamplifier. And then there are two wires, black, white and red, typically, and these two wires carry the acoustical information with reversed polarity. So the microphone itself, inside the body of the microphone, there is a circuit which creates two copies of the signal, one with standard correct polarity, so positive voltage means pressure above the average atmospheric pressure, which is the normal standard. So a positive electrical signal usually means pressure louder than the average atmospheric pressure. And on the other wire, pin 3, called the cold pin, pin 2 of the connector, this kind of connector with three pins is called an XLR connector. All the microphone usually employ this kind of XLR connector. Pin 2 is positive polarity, pin 3 is reversed polarity. So when the pressure was actually maximum, the electrical signal is negative voltage. The preamplifier, which is connected with this balanced wire, will amplify the difference between the two cables. With this trick, you actually reject all the electrical disturbance which has been captured by the cable despite the shielding. Because even if it is a shielded cable, some electrical contamination for a very long cable can occur. And this differential preamplification, this is a typical two-channel stereo microphone preamplifier, very cheap actually. The brand here is Behringer, which is probably the cheapest one. Nevertheless, it is a balanced preamplifier, so it only detects the difference between these two signals, and so it reacts the noise. Okay? This is the trick for being able to use very long microphone cable. If they were not balanced, it was not possible to use more than 2 or 3 meters cable. Instead, on the stage of a theater, you can have 50 meters of microphone cable, and still there is no noise captured by the cable. So this is a very important thing to understand. What happens if one of the two wires is broken? You still get signal, because the broken signal, the broken cable don't carry you any signal, and you amplify the difference between one of the two pins and zero voltage which comes from the other. So you still get signal, but you also get a lot of noise. So when you hear during a TV transmission, for example, that suddenly there is a lot of noise, but you still hear the voice of the guy talking, this is what happens. Somewhere along the cable on the connector, one of the two wires has been detached or shortened to ground, and nevertheless the other one is still carrying signal. But you hear noise, typically the typical electrical noise of 50 Hz from the electrical network, because the system is not balanced anymore, has become unbalanced. And when the system becomes unbalanced, you still get signal with a loss of 6 decibel, because now you have plus 1 volt, minus 1 volt, the voltage difference is 2 volt. If you lose one of the signal, you get only 1 volt, so 6 decibel less, half the amplitude. But more important, you get a lot of noise. And this is quite common to hear in a sound system where there is some bad cable or bad connector. And the preamplifier cannot correct for this. It needs two-wire connection, balanced connection, for reacting the noise. Okay? Well, some preamplifier also contain not linear circuit. For acoustical measurement, the preamplifier must be perfectly linear. But there is also non-linear processing, in particular compression and harmonic distortion. For example, this is a tube microphone preamplifier. There is a vacuum tube here, which is a strongly not linear response, which is nice in terms of musical task, but in terms of acoustical measurement is completely terrible, because it creates spurious frequency, it makes not linear distortion, so you enter with a pure tone at 1 kHz, and you also get 2 kHz, 3 kHz, 4 kHz, and so on. There are harmonics, harmonic distortion, which can be pleasant, but is not what was on the microphone. So it's something we should try to avoid, to use this kind of equipment for acoustical measurement. For music recording, it's fine. Then there is the analog to digital conversion, because nowadays all the systems are digital at some stage. Before or late, the signal is always digitized. And the digitalization can occur with two different ways. One is PCM, pulse code modulation, is the one which we are talking about since the beginning of the course, the most common one, where the amplitude is transformed in a signed integer number with a certain number of bits, which can be 16 bits, 20 bits, 24 bits, now also 32 bits. It does not matter. It's just a number, a normal digital number, positive or negative. And that's the common way, the traditional digital way. But there is a competing approach, which is called bitstream, or direct stream digital, that's the commercial patented name. It's also called single bit. And this is employed for a special optical medium, a special optical disc, called the SACT, or Super Audio CD. The Super Audio CD is a patent of Sony and Philips. Only they can manufacture this kind of disc. They never licensed to other makers this technology for production of the disc. They licensed the players, but not the makers. So they are the only one capable of creating this special disc. And on this disc, there is no the standard waveform sampled at, say, 96 kHz, 24 bit, but you have a single stream of bits, a bit stream, where the bit rate is several megahertz, 2.8 megahertz, if I remember correctly. Now there is also a high resolution version which is more than 5 megabit per second, because we have this bit stream which is very, very fast. And the acoustical information here is not carried by the amplitude, because the amplitude can only be 0 or 1. It's called by the pulse density, so how many pulse, how many ones are packed in time, in a certain time frame. The more ones are in the bit stream, the larger will be the amplitude. The more zeros will be packed in a certain time frame, the smaller will be the amplitude of the signal. So it is a strange way of storing acoustical information. It is an inefficient way of storing acoustical information. But a Super Audio CD has such a large storage capability, I think is more or less 10 gigabytes, so 100 gigabit. And with 100 gigabit, you can still store more than 1 hour of music, even if this approach is terribly inefficient. The nice thing of this approach, it is semi-analog. If you place this bitstream, and without converting it to analog, you feed a loudspeaker, you hear the sound. Because the loudspeaker work as a low-pass filter, it cannot reproduce megahertz. It can produce only kilohertz. So when you low-pass a bitstream, the low-passing operation demodulates the acoustical information which is stored in the pulse density. So it's a semi-analog system. It's digital because these are bits. But for listening to the sound, you don't need a converter. You just need a low-pass filter. And the low-pass filter can be loudspeaker itself, or the loudspeaker plus the transistor feeding in. So the electromagnetic circuit of the loudspeaker is already your digital to analog converter. So it is a minimalist system in which the electronics can be very simple, and which was claimed by Sony and Philips to give you better purity of the signal, because there is less digital processing on the bitstream. It's quite difficult to make any kind of modification of the signal. You cannot add reverb, you cannot equalize, you cannot make compression. It is very hard even to mix two signals. If you have two bitstream and you want to mix to one, it's quite tricky. It can be done, but it is terribly tricky. Because you cannot have two bits summed. One plus one makes two, and two is already overflow, because this system has only two levels, zero and one. So just summing two bit stream is very difficult. Okay? So this is the bitstream approach, which can be quite expensive. We don't understand why, because conceptually it's very simple and very limited. But for commercial reason, a bitstream recorder is very expensive, a PCM recorder is very cheap. Typically, a PCM recorder works with this kind of frequency. This is called special sound cards, but nowadays I must tell you that almost any cheap sound card can work at 192 kHz, even the cheapest one. So it's not so special anymore, okay? Well, when you go back from digital to analog, you need to employ a DAC, a digital to analog converter. Here you see the concept of the anti-aliasing filter, which I did already explain you in the previous lesson. If there is a pure tone above the Nyquist frequency, this pure tone will be mirrored back inside the audible spectrum if a proper aliasing filtering is not present. Of course, nowadays, every digital system has good anti-aliasing system, anti-aliasing filter, so in practice this aliasing problem should not occur. It's quite rare today. What you see here is the Apogee, probably the best analog to digital converter in the world, is the Rosetta. Well, it's terribly expensive. A converter like this one can only be afforded by professional recording studios. A two-channel unit like this one, I think, is around 4,000 euros. So it is a very expensive unit. The quality is incredibly good. It can work with signal-to-noise ratio around 120 decibels, which is really close to the maximum theoretically possible. Okay. In theory, it works at 24 bits. In practice, even this is the best system in the world. The dynamic range is around 120 decibels, which means in bits, more or less 21 bits are used correctly. The last 3 bits are just noise. The bitstream converter instead use a very high frequency, 288 MHz and only one bit resolution. Every time you halve the sampling rate, you get twice the amplitude of the signal. So, in the end, if you half and half and half, and every time you get one bit more, one bit more, one bit more, you end with only 7 bits. But with a trick which is called noise shaping, all the noise coming from using only 7 equivalent bits is pushed at very high frequency when you cannot hear it. And in the base band, up to 20 kHz, the signal-to-noise ratio of the Super Audio CD is close to the one of this kind of converter, so around 120 dB. So all the trick is in the noise shaping. Without noise shaping, the performance of bitstream will be horrible. With the noise shaping, you push all the noise at high frequency, and in baseband you have a very good signal to noise ratio. The good thing of this system is that having such a wide bandwidth and a so short sampling cycle, every bit is very short in time, it is incredibly fast in responding to transient. I explained to you that the anti-aliasing filter smear the sounding time and make the system less responsive to transient. This is particularly evident at low sampling frequency, where the anti-aliasing filter has little room to work. Then it rings a lot and it smears a lot the sound in time during transient. Instead, the bitstream does not have any anti-aliasing filter. We like aliasing in this case. Aliasing is the base of noise shaping. We love to have this noise at high frequency. It's not a problem here, because the Nyquist frequency here is very, very high. So there is no anti-aliasing filter. So the transient response in time is very, very fast. And this, again, according to Sony and Philips, is one of the reasons for which Super Audio CD is better than DVD audio. Okay? They did claim this as the most important reason for the superiority of the audible performance of the system. And in reality, if you make the computation, this is definitely true at low frequency, the corner where the bitstream converter outperforms PCM conversion is 88 Hz. So the low frequency percussion, typically the batteria, boom, all those things here, which are typical of modern music, are better reproduced by the bitstream system than with traditional PCM. I must tell you that the difference is very subtle. In practice, everyone is happy also with DVD audio. There is no real need of going with the Super Audio CD technology. In fact, the Super Audio CD technology rised and then fell down. And nowadays, who buys Super Audio CD? Just a bunch of audio files. There are some labels specialized in making recording for Super Audio CD. One of the most famous in the world is here in Italy, is called Phonet, but it's just one of five perhaps. And all the world market of Super Audio CD is around 1,000 discs per year. So 0.0000% of the total market of music. So it's a technology which is interesting from a scientific point of view, but which is completely disappeared from the market. Now, and it was also very expensive. So in practice, if you are going to buy a digital converter nowadays, by PCM, you can buy very cheap and very good sound cards, actually, or analog to digital converter, which can operate easily over USB interface and cost just a couple of hundred euros, 200 euros, 300 euros. You can buy an excellent PCM system nowadays. Well, then you have your recorded signal on your computer. You want to process it. We have already seen during the course using Adobe Audition. Adobe Audition is one of the most widely employed sound editors. It's not free. The free one is called Audacity, which is another very nice sound editor. Audition is made by Adobe and it costs a few hundred euros, 200 euros more or less. But compared with the price, provides you a lot of features, filtering, analysis, synthesis, conversion, and so on. So it's widely employed, is probably the most widely employed sound editor. But for professional application, in the recording and broadcasting industries, their standard software employed is not Adobe Audition, but is Pro Tools. Pro Tools is made by Avid, the same company which make the professional video editors. So again, the Adobe products are consumer products. Every one of you probably at home, when you make your home videos with your camera or with your cellular phone, and you mount them employing Adobe Premiere, which is the equivalent of Adobe Audition, is the widely employed video editor which almost everyone uses. Adobe Premiere and Adobe Audition are the top consumer level software. But going professional, in Rai or in Mediaset, they don't use Adobe products. They use Avid products. Also for making films. Now most films are digital video, are not made anymore with the film. The film is a plastic film. They are all digital recording, both audio and video, and they use Avid software. Avid means for audio Pro Tools. That's the reference. It's a very expensive program. It costs several thousand euros. It takes only a small subset of the function of Adobe Audition, and generally speaking, is much more difficult to employ. It does not take a nice and immediate user interface as Adobe Audition. So it's definitely worst, but in the professional world, that is the reference. Exactly as for video, Adobe Premiere is much better than Avid, but professional video makers use Avid. I don't know why, I did never understand why. But be prepared in your professional life, if you are working in this field like recording studios, video studios, film, television, and so on, the reference is Pro Tools, and your expertise in using Adobe Audition is of little value there, because this kind of software is much more tricky to use. Then we go talking about how many microphones employ and how many loudspeakers employ for recording and for playback. Now we are going very quickly to expose you to the knowledge of this system. Recording and playback. Remember that every kind of recording is tailored to the corresponding time of playback. This is not always true. When you make a recording, in the end, you don't know who will listen to the recording and which kind of sound system he will employ. So the best thing should be keep compatibility with different things. For example, people listening with a small portable radio will listen in mono. Not necessarily you need to use a mono recording, but if you use a stereo recording, for example, it must be mono compatible for be able to be played over the radio. Similar things on the TV. Most TV sets nowadays are stereo. Most video nowadays is 5.1. E2 surround is called, or Dolby surround. This kind of standard is typical for film. In a cinema theater, you aim a 5.1 sound system. At home with your TV set, most people have just a stereo TV set. So your 5.1 recording must be stereo compatible. You must be backward compatible with the lower system. Ambisonics, for example, was the first 3D system with help, not only horizontal surround, but also vertical surround. Now, if you make a 3D ambisonics music recording, you must also be able to play back on a two-dimensional sound system, because most people at home, even today, almost no one of you will have a 3D sound system at home. Only very few people have a 3D sound system with loudspeaker in the ceiling and loudspeaker at a lower rate. It's quite uncommon. So you can easily make the 3D recordings, but you not so easily make the 3D playback. This other system never kept up with, it employ a circular RA microphone, is second 2D third order ambisonics. This one is employed a lot in Germany, in Netherlands, in Norway, in Denmark, and so on. Particularly in cinemas, cinema room. It is a continuous line of loudspeakers surrounding completely the room, one next to the other, hundreds of loudspeakers. And then there are hybrid methods, of course, which combine some of these. Finally, but this will be the topic of next week's lesson, I got the ambisonics and the Eigenmai microphone. I will bring you the Eigenmai microphone in the room and we will play with it. Spatial PCMA sampling is something we invented here and it does not exist yet. It's the future. So in traditional recording, you record always mono. Many mono channels. A mono channel for the voice of each singer, a mono channel for the flutes, a mono channel for the violins, and so on. Every mono recording is then panned with a panner. What is a panner? It's a device which can be physical with a joystick, or can be software, like here, with the mouse on the screen, where you move the sound around. Typically, the panning is made for 5-channel mix. The 5-channel is the I2 surround employed for DVD. So, 99% of music production nowadays, both stereo or surround, is mono. It's not a real surround or real stereo. It's just mono. You record in mono. And then you pan artificially with your pan pot, with your device for panning. Okay? There are panning laws which are embedded in the panner, so the panner is built around a panning law, and these are two typical panning laws which are widely employed. The left one is called piwise panning, so the signal is always sent to only 2 channels. For example, if you place your signal center front, you only feed this loudspeaker. If you place the signal in between the center front and the right, you only feed these 2 loudspeakers with 2 different gain, and the other 3 are muted. This is piwise panning. It was the first panning law which was invented. And it's still quite employed today. Many mixers, particularly analog mixers, use only piwise panning. This is a new, more recent panning law. It has more or less 10 years, 2003 it was invented. Is the Craven ambisonic panning. And this is typically employed not on a physical mixer with joystick or knobs, but on software. For example, this is the panner included with Nero. Nero is a software for making DVD. It comes with a surround mixer, a surround panner, and the Nero surround panner works with the ambisonics panning. The ambisonics panning always feed all the loudspeakers. For example, in this example here, the green point was placed here. in between the center front and the right. But as you see, there is some signal sent everywhere. This is hard panned to the center, so the green dot has been dragged over the loudspeaker, which now is enlightened. And in this case, you are hard panning the voice of this singer only in the center channel. But when you place your green dot in between the loudspeaker, you always feed all of them, not only the two close to the position of the dot. In this case, you see, you are feeding with louder signal the left and the left surround, but also the center, the right and the right surround are fed with some amplitude of the signal. They never go to zero. Okay? This is the same information plotted in polar plot. In this case you see that outside a certain angle every cars go to zero. In this case you see these lobes here, which are these waves here, which are the feed to the other channel. Another difference is that these panning lobes are strongly asymmetrical, while the ambisonic panning lobes are definitely more symmetrical. Okay. Then we go to the playback system and the corresponding microphone system. One true stereo system, one of the best true stereo system, is called ORTF. ORTF is the French radio television. This is like RAI, okay? ORTF is the same in France as RAI in Italy. And the ORTF method employs two microphones feeding to loudspeaker. It looks stupid. Left microphone feeds the left loudspeaker, right microphone feeds the right loudspeaker, one to one. No mixing, no crossfading, no processing. Very simple, minimalist. This is one of the best minimalist techniques in which there is no processing. The two microphones are cardioids, are open 110 degrees, and they are physically located at a distance of 170 millimeters, which is more or less the same distance as the ears of the human head. So the recording you make with these two microphones is roughly similar to what you sample with your ears, actually, because the directivity of our ears are really pointing almost 55 degrees in front of you. The maximum sensitivity of your ears is not in front, but is 55 degrees on the left and on the right, and the distance between the two ears is more or less 170 millimeters. So is a very rough model of human hearing system. So the recording is very natural. And when you play it back over a pair of loudspeakers, which must be placed in this way at the vertices of an equilateral triangle. This is the stereo triangle. Well, if you respect this geometry when recording and this geometry at playback, of course you must be exactly in the center of the two loudspeakers, what you get here between the two loudspeakers is the so-called phantom chain, where you hear phantom sources. Let's suppose that the singer was here, with an angle between the vertical, the central direction and this direction of, say, 30 degrees. If the source was here, when you sit here, you will listen to a phantom source which will appear here at the correct angle. Okay? So the system is faithful within this angle, which is an opening, a total opening of 60 degrees, If the source was within this 60 degree range here, then the playback will be fine, will be correct. If the source is outside this, it will be squeezed in one of the two loudspeakers. So everything occurring here will come only out from this loudspeaker. Everything can appear happening here will be played back here. So for having a realistic sheen, this kind of microphone must be placed at a perfectly optimized distance from the stage, because you must see the stage, the orchestra in front of you, over a 60 degree angle. If you place the microphone at the proper distance from the orchestra, then you get a perfect stereo recording, which will give you the impression of being seated in front of the orchestra when you listen with a perfect playback system. This is theory. The practice is that you are not always allowed to place your microphone where you would like to place. Often you need to suspend them behind the curtains when they are out of sight, so they can be either too close or too far from the orchestra, so the angles will be not the correct one. And at playback, the two loudspeakers are where your wife allows you to place them. And the wife always don't love loudspeaker, don't love wires, and they say, oh, bring this loudspeaker behind the sofa, or bring the other one above scaffolds and so on. And so the loudspeaker will be completely in wrong position. So, of course, the system is not going to work so well. But if you manage to build your listening room at home with the proper loudspeaker in the proper position and your seat, single seat, you cannot listen in two, side by side. It's not going to work. It is only work for one listener. In the exact center of the two loudspeakers, then it works really very well. The impression is to be in front of the stage in the theater. But it's not easy to have it working. This is another interesting system called stereo dipole, which instead employs for recording a dummy head with the microphone in the ears, like the dummy head employed for measuring IACC, which is one of the acoustical parameters in the room. Those kind of dummy head can also be employed for recording music. You place the dummy head at a selected seat in the theater, and in this case the choice is simply where people going to that theater tell you that the sound is best, the best seat of the room. You select the best seat of your concert hall and you sit there, your hidden torso, instead of a listener. So what it records is what you had heard if you were seated there during the concert. At the playback you have two choices. One is listened by headphones, which is very nice, because a binaural recording is perfect for being listened by headphones. And this is nowadays very often the case, because nowadays a lot of the music being manufactured and sold is going to be listened on an iPod, or a cellular phone with small earbuds. So when you listen with a personal device with wires and your two earbuds, if the recording was binaural, it is already perfect and you have to do nothing. But what if you want to play it back over a pair of loudspeakers at home or inside your car? It's not correct, because that is a binaural recording and the left signal should come only on the left ear and the right signal should arrive only on the right ear. Instead, usually you get crosstalk, so the left loudspeaker also gives signal to the right ear, and the right loudspeaker also gives signal to the left ear. How can you cancel these cross paths? You need a crosstalk canceller. The crosstalk canceller is a digital processing system inserted between the recorded signal and the speaker feeds. So here you make some magic, some digital processing, which is aimed to cancelling these filters. So you start measuring your system, placing your hidden torso, here you see a Bruelekir dummy head in front of a stereo dipole loudspeaker pair. You see how close are the two loudspeakers each other. They are not spaced, like in this case, 60 degrees. They are spaced only 20 degrees. They are quite close together. The system works better in this case. The closer the loudspeaker, the better is the crosstalk cancellation. So the loudspeaker are close each other. You measure this four transfer function called H, and then you compute these four crosstalk cancelling filter called F by inverting your measured transfer function. In practice, F are the filter which are computed from the measured transfer function H with these formulas here. The denominator or the inverse filter of this product is different to compute because while doing convolution, which is product in frequency domain, is easy, doing the fraction, the deconvolution, the division in frequency domain, is difficult. And for doing the division, you use this approximate division formula for computing the inverse of this object here, and this requires to insert the regularization parameter epsilon for avoiding to divide by zero at frequency where this object here inside the bracket becomes very small, which will cause the inverse filter to go crazy and ring forever. So with this kind of formulation, you start from your measured transfer function H. H are the measured one, left to left to right, right to left, right to right. You invoke the software which computes the inverse filter and you get the four inverse filter. When you convolve your measured data with your filtering matrix, so you actually do this kind of processing, the signal is convolved with the filters and then the results are summoned and sent to the loudspeaker. You apply this filter and make again the measurement, and this is what you get. The left to left is a Dirac delta function, flat and good power. The left to right is almost zero, or 40 dB attenuated, more than 40 dB attenuated. Again, the right to left is really zero in this case, the blue line. And the right to right is again almost one with flat frequency response. So the system really managed to cancel the crosstalk. This was the crosstalk. And now the crosstalk is gone and the response of your loudspeaker is flattened and made a perfect Dirac delta function. This system works very well. We have it running in our listening room here in Parma, and it provides you with a nice panoramic chain which is approximately 180 degrees wide. So while a traditional stereo system works only in 60 degrees, this system works in 180 degrees. The problem is just that the crosstalk filter work for the specific position of the listener. If you move, you get colored sound. There is a very well defined sweet spot, even more precise than with standard stereo. If you move just a few centimeters from the sweet spot position, the system goes bad. Of course, the system only covers the frontal hemispace. If you want the rear hemispace, you need to add a second rear dual stereo dipole for covering the rear part of the scene. So with four loudspeaker, you cover all the surrounding information. And the problem at low frequency is solved simply adding a subwoofer. So this is a 4.1 system. Four main loudspeaker plus the subwoofer. This is the system we have in our listening room at Casa della Musica, and it's really fantastic because it can give you the impression of sound coming everywhere, also innate and from below, from everywhere, employing just four loudspeaker. You can hear a sound coming from your side, and you look there, and there is no loudspeaker there, and you still hear the sound coming there. It's really magic. Until you listen to the stereo dipole system, you cannot trust it. It's absurd. There is no loudspeaker. In this case, there was, but it's not connected. If you have sound coming from that direction, you say, ah, okay, it's coming from that loudspeaker. Then you go there and you see there are no wires. This loudspeaker is not working. It's dummy. Okay? We have learned that it's important to have dummy loudspeaker around you, because if not, the people seated here does not understand what's happening. Because you hear sound coming from direction where there is no loudspeaker. So we place them dummy loudspeaker for making the sound more natural. Then you go and check and see, oh, but this loudspeaker is just a black box. There is no wires, no signal going to it. The signal always comes from only these two loudspeakers, but you hear the sound coming from there. It's magic. Okay, these are other pictures of the listening room, two frontal loudspeakers here and two rear loudspeakers in the back. Then we talk about Dolby Surround, which is the typical format for DVD audio. In this case, we have five loudspeakers, and you need to create five speaker feed. 99% of the time, as explained at the beginning, is just mono. So you have mono recording, which is panned over the five loudspeakers, and that's all. In very rare case, you want to have a high-level recording employing instead a discrete microphone array. A discrete microphone array employs one microphone for every loudspeaker. In this example here, you see five microphones feeding the five loudspeakers of the system. Many different microphone arrays have been proposed, and I must warn you that most of them simply don't work. They were proposed, people attempted to use them, and the results were horrible. Panel mono, generally speaking, works much better. That must be said. Nevertheless, the research is going on, and a lot of people proposed this different arrangement of microphone with different distance and with different aiming of the microphone for feeding this crappy loudspeaker system. The problem is not with the microphone. The microphone system is not working because the loudspeaker are in the wrong position. Three of the five loudspeakers are packed frontally in just 60 degrees, like in a normal stereo. And the other 300 degrees are served by just two loudspeakers placed substantially at your side, not in behind. This system is stupid, can't work. If it was a regular pentagon, it had worked much better. We don't know why Dolby decided for this layout, but that was their decision, and this is how surround sound systems are designed to work. So probably this is good for sound effects for films. It's completely wrong for music recording. Nevertheless, this is the standard nowadays, and most of you at home has a sound system like this one. Three small loudspeakers placed just below the TV set, and two surround loudspeakers placed below where your wife allows you to place, behind the sofa probably. Okay, so the system is not going to work because faults of the playback system. The microphone system are just providing discrete feeds one microphone for every loudspeaker. That's the idea. Here we see some of the best of this discrete microphone array. This one is the best one, Williams. Williams MMA is the only one which really works, I would say. He is the winner of this contest. So you have all cardio and microphone, all pointing forward, pointing outside, I would say, not forward. So there is a central one pointing forward, these two ones are 50 centimeters apart, and left and right are pointing plus minus 40 degrees left and right, and then you have those surround microphone which are less spaced and pointing slightly backwards. This another one is a German approach called INA 5, and this is OCT, another one again. Okay. What you can do in some case is to create virtual discrete microphone array with this nice software called Visual Virtual Microphone. It's not the only one, but there are now software which allow you to create this virtual microphone array even if you did not record with your 5 microphone, instead of using a panner. Someone claims that the surround provided by this Visual Virtual Microphone approach is better than the signal coming from real microphone. I don't trust this. My opinion is that the real thing is always better. But someone is claiming that it's better to make it virtual, and so on. So this system did not catch up because it is expensive. It's not practical. You need to find a good location where to place your microphone array, which often you are not allowed to place the microphone in that position. And it's difficult to control the directivity pattern of your microphone because you would like to create, if possible, polar patterns like this one, but no existing microphone have this polar pattern. What you have are these polar patterns. This is what you can have. This is the only choice you have. So you don't really have the microphones which will be optimal for this kind of discrete approach. So actually is not using a lot of this system. Okay, I think it's time to stop. Second breath.